Isaiah 40, the script starts at Isaiah 41.
Oh, okay.
We're not
survival.
And actually, and David's turned the other recording on.
So
everyone knows that that Bible study, it's just so you know, it's recorded. And so, yeah, if we can just stay on point, that would be great.
Okay, so it's time to talk about bigger shanks and spicks for an hour.
There you go.
Okay, here we go. Like chapter 41. Keep silence before me, O islands, and let the people renew their strength. Let them come near, then let them speak. Let us come near together to judgment. Who raised up the righteous man from the east, called him to his foot, gave the nations before him, and made him rule over kings. He gave them as the dust to his sword and as driven stubble to his bow. He pursued them and passed safely even by the way that he had not gone with his feet. Who hath wrought and done it, calling the generations from the beginning? I, Yahweh, the first, and with the last, I am he. The isle saw it and feared. The ends of the earth were afraid, drew near and came. They helped everyone his neighbor, and everyone said to his brother, be of good courage. So the carpenter encouraged the goldsmith, and he that smootheth with the hammer, him that smote the anvil, saying, it is ready for the soldering, and he fastened it with nails, that it should not be moved. But thou, Israel, art my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend, that whom I have taken from the ends of the earth, and called thee from the chief men thereof, and said unto thee, thou art my servant, I have chosen thee, and not cast thee away. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yeah, I will help thee, yeah, I will hold thee the right hand of my righteousness. End of verse 10.
Yeah, I'm glad you stopped there. That this first... This is where the mainstream critics say that this must be a different Isaiah, which is bullshit. What this is that this is the same Isaiah who is, that this is after the siege of Jerusalem is over. It's after the Assyrian army has been destroyed. It's after the Assyrians are gone. And they're not really coming back. I mean, they kind of do a couple of times in the rule of Esarhaddon. But Sennacherib doesn't come back, and Esarhaddon's coming into an Israel and dealing with Samaria that's already been decimated and taken into captivity. So this chapter, where this chapter commences, it's Isaiah, it's Yahweh God addressing Israel in captivity through the prophet Isaiah. The next 26 chapters are addressed to Israel in captivity, not Israel in Palestine, not Jerusalem, not Judah, but all of Israel that was taken into captivity. And where it says, who raised up the righteous man from the east and called him to his foot and gave the nations before him and made him rule over kings. I mean, British Israel people and others, identity Christians, have always taken that as a messianic prophecy. And I would say that, yeah, in a sense, it is a messianic prophecy. All these prophecies have long-term fulfillments and short-term fulfillments. But in the short-term fulfillment, it's basically talking about the king of Assyria that the children of Israel gave to the king of Assyria as the dust and driven the stubble to his bow, because the king of Assyria was the man through whom Yahweh had executed judgment against the children of Israel for their sins. So where it's talking about the islands, it's addressing the islands. Keep silence before me. Oh, islands. That word could also mean coastlands or shore regions or extremities. And it's basically addressing the children of Israel in captivity who were planted by the Assyrians around the Black and Caspian Seas. For the most part. So I believe it's talking directly to them. Then in verse 8, we see a reassurance. that Yahweh is still dealing with the children of Israel, even though they're in captivity. And where it says, thou whom I have taken from the ends of the earth, well, they're not quite to the ends of the earth yet, but that's where they're going. And that's an assurance that he's going to take them back from the ends of the earth. That's how I read that. It's a prophecy that Yahweh calls things as existing before they existed, as Paul explains in Romans chapter 5. Or maybe that's chapter 4, I forget, to be honest. I think it's chapter 4.
Well, he's going to call them from the east and the west and the north and the south, from distant lands. So like some are going to be coming a long way, distance-wise, if you want to just think of it that way. Verse 11, behold, all they that were incensed against thee shall be ashamed and confounded. They shall be as nothing, and they that strive with thee shall perish. Thou shalt seek them and shalt not find them, even them that contend with thee. They that war against thee shall be as nothing and as a thing of naught. For I, Yahweh thy God, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, fear not, I will help thee. Fear not, thou worm, Jacob, and ye men of Israel. I will help thee, saith Yahweh, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. Behold, I will make thee a new sharp threshing instrument, having teeth. Thou shalt thresh the mountains and beat them small, and shalt make the hills as chaff. Thou shalt fan them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them. And thou shalt rejoice in Yahweh, and shalt glory in the Holy One of Israel. When the poor and needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue faileth for thirst, I, Yahweh, will hear them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers in high places, and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water, and the dry land springs of water. I will plant in the wilderness the cedar, the shittah tree, and the myrtle, and the oil tree. I will set in the desert a fir tree, and the pine, and the box tree together. Now, they that may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of Yahweh hath done this, and the Holy One of Israel hath created it. End of verse 20.
I'm not sure what a shittah tree is, and Strong's isn't really defining it correctly. Okay. But basically, wherever the children, even though the children of Israel were taken off into captivity, that they're going to conquer everybody that they encounter. And they did. The Germanic tribes did, but where they encountered the Greeks and the Phrygians and the Greeks and the Lydians of Western Anatolia, and where they encountered the Romans and the Iberians and whatever Greek settlers there were in Gaul before they got there, that they eventually conquered all those people. And they eventually caused Rome to fall, right? I mean, they did do this. They did destroy Assyria in 612 BC. I mean, there were others in on that. The Persians, Medes, and Babylonians. But they did destroy all the Syrian cities of the Assyrians. And they rampaged through Anatolia, the Cimmerians, and destroyed everything in their path. So this was fulfilled in the immediate sense, but it also was fulfilled over 1,000 years. When the Goths and the Vandals and the Huns and other groups finally destroyed Rome.
It's Daniel 2, right?
Right. Daniel chapter 2, Daniel chapter 7. This goes hand in hand with that. And they did destroy the old world, essentially. Then there were other factors involved, like having it overrun with niggers and stuff like that, for different reasons. But they did destroy the old world. The white pagan world was destroyed by these captives of Israel before the time of Christ, for the most part. I mean, Rome took a while. But Persia was destroyed by the Parthians. And most of the rest of Mesopotamia and Anatolia were destroyed or conquered by the Scythians and the Cimmerians. They sacked Rome in 390 BC, but they didn't destroy it. That otherwise, that Daniel's fourth beast could have never existed. But they occupied Iberia and Gaul, and everywhere north of there. So this basically did happen. I mean, it did unfold in history, in the history of the captivity of Israel. Where it says thy worm, you know, in the gospel, Christ mentions these people who are going to suffer, evidently in the trials of this life. That's how I read this. And their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. A worm is, I think, what's left of a man. And this captivity is a worm because it's what's left of Jacob Israel. Where it was a great mighty nation in the time of David and Solomon and ruled half of the known world at that time. Now it's just a remnant in captivity. It's a worm. Compared to what it was. That's how I understand that word, to be a remnant of something or a remainder of something.
Yeah, in a way, it's got to be positive, because just the verse next is, I will help thee, saith Yahweh, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. So it's not derogatory. He's going to help them.
Yeah, I basically think that reference to a worm is like, that's what's left of
yep.
you is nothing.
That's probably right.
What's left of you is less than nothing, but I'll help you.
Sure does seem like that happens a lot, where there's just a small handful left again.
Yeah, we're facing that again now.
I think so.
All these white Christian people are just nothing but fucking perverts and sinners and accepting all this tranny and faggot stuff, and it's crazy. And they're accepting of it.
Yep.
Yeah, have you seen that drag queen Penny Cost?
Drag queen Pentecost, huh? Wow.
Penny, P-E-N-N-Y, then C-O-S-T.
Which is basically mocking God.
I think it's a Jew.
It's got to be a Jew. Only a Jew could do that.
Yeah, what a surprise. Oh, man.
Wow, Miss Pentecost, drag queen. Kikes. This just makes you want to cuss. I'm sorry.
Makes me want to go hit him right in the frickin' head.
The first drag queen certified candidate for ordination in the United Methodist Church. There you have it.
Oh, man. Is that what that guy is? That one that... Or is that a different thing? Pentecost.
Oh, this is disgusting. This is... No, it's the same one, right?
Okay.
The same one Jerry was talking about.
Yep.
Ms. Pentecost discusses being the first drag queen certified candidate for ordination in the United Methodist Church.
God, it just keeps going down and down and down.
Real
name
is.
I now pronounce you donkey and husband.
How the hell do these people take this seriously? There's a limit to tolerance.
Yeah, there is a limit to tolerance, and this is way beyond the limit.
Yep.
The event was sponsored by the Rainbow Alliance, Sacred Worth, and the University Christian Ministry. Wow.
I don't know why I'm laughing. It ain't funny.
Ms. Pentecost empowers those on the margins. You know, back in the days of Christ, those on the margins had freaking leprosy. Their faces were falling off. That's what they deserve. Cost is 24 years old.
I feel and dirty for even pastor looking that up on my phone.
24 nothing years like old, that. Right?
Yeah. Real name is Isaac Simmons.
Yeah, of course. Isaac Simmons, straight kike.
Yep.
Nothing like a Mystery Babylon to fall for these people to get adjusted real quickly.
User entered your channel.
Oh, it must be all right. They're God's chosen people. I don't know if people think like that, but I'm starting to think they must.
Yeah. So God's chosen people get to choose the morals and laws that we should live under.
Seems like. Well, it seems like it to me. When you look around, it kind of is.
Yeah, right. They're confusing God's chosen people for God. How the hell do you make that? Only a Jew can make that bait and switch. Yeah.
Well, they are a bunch of, they are a brazen bunch. Ooh.
Don't they have a word for that, too? I'm trying to think about what it is right now. Chutzpah. Chutzpah, that's
chutzpah,
it.
Huh?
Yeah, they coined the term for it.
Yep.
Wow. Just straight
out of the way. I was going to say Jewry.
Yeah, chutzpah is like audacity, and that's exactly what they are. They're audacious. They're right in your face. All kinds of sin, all kinds of vile, foul ideas, and they're promoting them as being good and wholesome, and wow. Sodom and Gomorrah, wow. Those men outside Lot's house wanted to just sodomize the angels.
What?
Or not daughters, they wanted to sodomize men instead.
Yeah, and you could say that the Jews are more like, you know, what? Why do these goyim fight back? They're not supposed to fight back. They're supposed to take it silent. You know, when I say fight back, it's more like, oh, we don't like this.
Verse 21. Produce your cause, saith Yahweh. Bring forth your strong reason, saith the King of Jacob. Let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things and what be, that they may consider them and know the latter end of them, or declare us things to come. Show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that ye are gods. Yeah, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed. Behold it together. Behold, ye are of nothing, and your work is of naught. An abomination is he that chooseth you. I have raised up one from the north, and shall come from the rising of the sun, shall he call upon my name, and he shall come upon princes as upon mortar, and as the potter treadeth clay. Who hath declared from the beginning that we may know, and before time that we may say, he is righteous. Yeah, there is none that showeth. Yeah, there is none that declareth. Yeah, there is none that heareth your words. The first shall say to Zion, behold them, and I will give to Jerusalem one that bringeth good tidings. For I beheld, and there was no man, even among them, and there was no counsel, that when I asked of them could answer a word. Behold, they are all vanity, their works are nothing, their molten images are wind and confusion.
All the idols, all the priests of the idols are all vanity. They're all liars. They can't tell you the past. They can't reveal the future. And I just quoted this the other day, I think, in the Revelation podcast. That this is the challenge. That this is the ultimate challenge to anything that considers itself a god, is that the Bible, in the Bible, Yahweh and Yahshua Christ in the New Testament foretold the future again and again, and, yep. and it has come true. So why should we care about vain idols? So this is the challenge and a litmus test for what is godly and what isn't.
Yep.
I raised up one from the north, and he shall come from the rising of the sun. He shall call upon my name, and he shall come upon princes as upon mortar, and as the potter that treads the clay. And that's kind of interesting, because it seems to be a reference to Cyrus that we're going to see by name in Isaiah chapter 44. So did Cyrus call upon Yahweh? I mean, I can't ever say that. There's no records, right? There's no actual direct records for the Persians. All we know about Cyrus is what the pagan Greeks told us about him later, and a little bit that we see in scripture. But Cyrus is named in Isaiah, and Cyrus wasn't born for perhaps 50 years after Isaiah wrote, or later. Let me think about this. Cyrus died in 530 BC. So he must have been born about 580 BC. So he was born about 120 years after Isaiah wrote this, for real. At least 120. Isaiah had to write this around 700 to 698 BC in there. Even though I indicated the other day that the chronology of this book is off a little bit, because those two chapters or three chapters preceding this one should have preceded chapter 37, I think it was, right? Let me go look at Isaiah 37, 36. I think it was Isaiah chapter 36. And that's because it's 15 years. Yeah. Isaiah chapter 36 and 37 describe the taking of the cities of Judah by Sennacherib and the siege of Jerusalem. Isaiah chapter 38, in those days was Hezekiah sick unto death. And I demonstrated for y'all last week or the week before that chapters 38, 39, and 40 happened at the same time as chapters 36 and 37. And probably should have been placed before chapters 36 and 37. So because they tell Hosea that he's going to live another 15 years, and the events of chapters 36 and 37 happened during those 15 years. So 38, 39, and 40 should have came before 36 and 37, and the book of Isaiah would have made more sense. And I'm going to put that into writing one day soon, I hope, and spell out the details, chapter and verse, in order to prove it. So Isaiah here in chapter 41 is writing sometime after that siege of Jerusalem. And he actually... It must be talking about Cyrus here, because he actually mentioned Cyrus by name 120 years before Cyrus is born. And that's why the Jews and the critics think that Isaiah could not have lived, that this must be some other later Isaiah, because they just don't believe that a prophet of Yahweh can tell the future. They don't believe that. So they'll read this and they'll say, there's no way that Isaiah could have known about Cyrus before Cyrus was born. But the truth is that, yes, Isaiah did know about Cyrus before Cyrus was born. He mentions him by name in this chapter. And if you believe in God, you'll understand that. Yep. don't really believe God. You can't understand that. And the Jews can't really understand that. So they try to subscribe this, that these 26 chapters of Isaiah to some later Isaiah at some different time, maybe in the second century or the third century or the fourth century. They can't believe that a prophet of God could name a man who would be king 100 years later.
Well, they sure couldn't figure out Yeshua Christ then, could they?
Oh, right. That the Isaiah had a lot of things here that were fulfilled hundreds of years later.
Yeah.
But the mention of Cyrus is so explicit that they just can't handle that. They can't understand that.
It's kind of what a prophet is, isn't it?
Yeah, right. So that doesn't, that the actual mention of Cyrus doesn't come for a couple of chapters. But he is mentioned by name, and I think he's being alluded to here, right? He's mentioned in Isaiah 44, he's mentioned in Isaiah 45 by name. But Isaiah knew things about, and they're revealed here in these chapters, these 26 chapters, he knew things about the ancient world and where he's writing at the very end of the 8th century BC or the 7th century BC, 698, 699. And he knew things about that world that couldn't have been known unless he lived at that time. That's all I have to say about this section, unless there's anything any of y'all can think of.
Okay, ready for 42, chapter 42? Behold, my servant whom I uphold, mine elect, in whom my soul delighteth. I have put my spirit upon him, and he shall bring forth judgment to the Gentiles. He shall not cry nor lift up, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed shall he not break, and the smoking flax shall he not quench. He shall bring forth judgment unto truth. He shall not fail nor be discouraged till he has set judgment in the earth, and the isles shall wait for his law. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, where'd I get that? God of Yahweh, he that createth the heavens and stretcheth them out, he that spreadeth forth the earth, and that which cometh out of it, he that giveth breath unto the people upon it, and spirit to them that walk here therein. I, Yahweh, have called thee in righteousness, and I will hold thine hand, and I will keep thee, and give thee for a covenant of the people, for a light of the Gentiles, to open the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from the prison, and them that sit in darkness out of the prison house. I, Yahweh, that is my name. And my glory will I not give, not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. Behold, the former things have come to pass, and new things do I declare. Before thy spring forth, I tell you of them. Sing unto Yahweh a new song, and his praise from the end of the earth. Ye that go down to the sea, all ye that is therein, the isles and the inhabitants thereof. Let the wilderness and the cities thereof lift up their voice, and the villages that Kedar doth inhabit. Let the inhabitants of the rock sing. Let them shout from the tops of the mountains. Let them give glory unto the Yahweh and declare his praise in the isles. Yeah, that's the end of verse 12.
Well, yeah, you know, I really believe that this has a dual fulfillment, like all the other prophecies. And if I ever write a commentary on Isaiah, that's what I'll say, that this belongs to Cyrus, who's going to be mentioned in chapter 44, in the short term, because it was Cyrus, the king of Persia, who allowed the people that were in captivity to return to their original homelands. And that's why Nehemiah was able to go back and Ezra was able to go back and bring tens of thousands of people with them back to Jerusalem to establish the city of Jerusalem once again and build the second temple. That was on account of Cyrus made that decree. And if you read both Daniel and Herodotus, even though Cambyses and Darius and later kings really didn't like it, they had to honor it, because it says in Daniel and it says in Herodotus, the historian, that the laws of the Persians cannot change. That once a king makes a law, that law has to stick and it can't be changed. So that was their custom. So Cyrus made that decree, and the later kings had to obey it, meaning Cambyses, Darius, Artaxerxes, whoever. So it's talking about Cyrus in the short term making that fulfillment to bring the prisoners out of the prison and to let them go back to Jerusalem. And there were people of other nations in Assyrian captivity as well that were able to go back to their homelands at that same time. How many of them did or not, who knows? Who knows? I mean, we can't know, because the history of that period is very sparsely recorded, except from the biblical perspective. The Bible recorded more of that period than any other source. And the Greeks recorded enough so that we could corroborate the biblical recording, and not much more. So it was Cyrus that allowed the captives to go back. So he is the short-term fulfillment of this. But of course, it's also a messianic prophecy. And Christ had quoted this in verse 7 in reference to himself, and verse 6 was quoted in by the apostles in reference to Christ. So Cyrus was a light of the nations in that he allowed the nations to return. He not all of them returned, but he did allow them to return to their original homelands from wherever they were put into captivity by the Assyrians and Babylonians. But he was also the one that let the prisoners out of the prison house in that same aspect. And that's the short-term fulfillment. But of course, the long-term fulfillment is in Yahshua Christ. And that's very clear. And that's why I believe Cyrus was not named in these chapters. He's only named in 44 and 45. Because this all has a dual fulfillment, and it belongs to Christ really more than it belongs to Cyrus, but in a short term, it belongs to Cyrus. Now, if you listened maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago to my 100 proofs, the 100 proofs I did on the Parthians, I alluded to the fact that the Achaemenid kings of Persia may have been Israelites. I didn't say that explicitly, but I alluded to that. If you see that last 100 proofs that I did on the Parthians, you'll hear that at the end. I alluded to it, but I can't prove it. It seems to be circumstantially possible, but I can't prove it.
User left your channel.
So the name Cyrus has a Greek User origin of Kairos, meaning Lord.
I don't know if Cyrus is right from Kyrios. I don't know. I mean, Persians and Greeks had cognate words too, right? Cyrus is likened in Hebrew to Koresh, which was also Correct. One of the names of Aaron's sons. I think Aaron's sons or nephews or grandsons or some shit, Koresh in scripture. In Hebrew, Cyrus is Koresh.
Correct.
Now, does Kyrios have a relationship to Koresh? Thresh means possess thou the furnace, according to this.
I have S-U-N, son, or one who bestows care. It's also related to Karash, with Rosh being the Hebrew word for king.
Yeah, I mean, that's implied in Strong's definition that it could be related to that, but it's not really related directly. I'd want to study that more. I really would. I mean, a lot of Greek came from Hebrew. If Kyrios came from Hebrew, I wouldn't be surprised. But this word, Koresh, being a compound word, seems to have a more intricate etymology than Kyrios. And if that's what it meant in Hebrew, it didn't come over that way into Greek. Because the Kyrios, the definition of Kyrios is a lot more simpler. I'm not saying it's not possible. I would just want to study it more. And see how Koresh was used in Persian, if it was. If it's a Hebrew word, it could very well, it can more than likely have a Persian cognate, a related Persian word. And now on that note, I would really like to be excused for about 2 minutes because I'm just freaking getting old. I'll be back.
Is it possible to pause the recording or?
Maybe you can edit recording to skip those 2 minutes.
Yeah, because I have in Wikipedia, it says, what the heck does that say again? It says, Cyrus is of Greek origin, and the meaning of Cyrus is Lord, derived via the Greek form Kairos, of the name of several kings of Persia. In earlier times, it was linked with Greek Kyrios, meaning Lord. May also derived from the Persian word throne.
I'm sorry, I'm back. I tried to make it fast.
Yeah, apparently in the Wikipedia, it's saying, no, actually, it's on another site. It's saying that in earlier times, it was linked with Greek Kyrios, meaning Lord. It may also derive from the Persian word for throne.
See, I don't have a good resource for strictly Persian words. I never had the time in my life yet to go get to see if there was even a Persian lexicon available. I have an entire Assyrian lexicon found at the American Schools of Oriental Research website. There's an entire Assyrian lexicon in several volumes. So I have studied occasionally certain Assyrian words, but I've never had the need, I guess, to go get a Persian lexicon. I haven't had a pressing need, but yeah, I would like to have an ancient Persian lexicon if one is available. It might give even more insight into the development of Greek and English, right? It really would.
Yeah, and actually, that was interesting what you were saying about the kings being derived, the Persian kings, that we say the Akhmad kings being derived from the Israelites.
It's very possible, and there are circumstances which seem to indicate that, but I can't prove it. I don't have enough evidence to even write a paper about it or to make a proof of it. So I only alluded to it in that 100 proofs part 75, I think. Yeah, 75. At the end, I alluded to that. The kings of the Achaemenid kings came from the same district that the Magi originated in, according to some of the classics. And I cited that. And I really do believe that Magi were, for the most part, Levites. The Magi among the Medes. The Levites would have been called Magi among the Medes. They would have never been called Levites. Which explains how there could be three Magi or more, because it was probably more, who came to the Christ child in Jerusalem.
User disconnected from your channel.
Okay, we on Isaiah or what?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep, verse 13.
Verse 13. Yahweh shall go forth as a mighty man. He shall stir up jealousy like a man of war. He shall cry, yeah, roar.
User entered
he
your
shall
channel.
Prevail against his enemies. I have long time holding my peace. I have been still and refrained myself. Now will I cry like a travailing woman. I will destroy and devour at once. I will make waste mountains and hills and dry up all their herbs. And I will make the rivers islands and I will dry up the pools. And I will bring the blind by a way that they knew not. And I will lead them in paths that they had not known. I will make darkness light before them and crooked things straight. These things will I do unto them and not forsake them. They shall be turned back. They shall be greatly ashamed that trust in graven images, that say to the molten images, ye are, you are our gods. Hear ye deaf and look as ye blind as ye may see. Who is blind but my servant? Or deaf is my messenger that I sent. Who is blind is he that is perfect, and blind as the Lord's servant, as Yahweh's servant. Seeing many things, but thou observest not, opening the ears, but he heareth not. Yahweh is well pleased for his righteousness' sake. He will magnify the law and make it honorable. But this is a people robbed and spoiled. They are all of them snared in holes, and they are hid in prison houses. If for a prey and none deliver, for a spoil and none saith, restore. Who among you will give ear to this? Who will hearken and hear for the time to come? Who gave Jacob for a spoil and Israel to the robbers? Did not Yahweh, he against whom we have sinned? For they would not walk in his ways, neither were they obedient unto his law. Therefore he hath poured out upon him the fury of his anger and the strength of battle, and it hath set him on fire round about. Yet he knew not and burned him, yet he hit laid it not to heart. End of chapter 43 or 42.
User disconnected from your channel.
So here in verse 22, it's unmistakably without a doubt that it is the children of Israel in prison houses. It's the children of Israel who were robbed and spoiled. They were taken into captivity by the Assyrians. There are still some people left in Jerusalem, but the people left in Jerusalem are a small portion of all the Israelites that were taken into Assyrian captivity or killed in the Assyrian conquest of Israel and Judah. The ones left in Jerusalem are only a smaller portion of that, primarily of Judah, Benjamin, and Levi, So here we have the remnant of Israel of all 12 tribes in Assyrian captivity, and they are described as being the people in prison houses. So they are the prisoners that Christ is going to lead out of the prisons. In throughout all these prophecies in chapter 41, 42, and later. So in verse 16, I will bring the blind by the way that they knew not. They're not going back to Palestine. They're not going back to their Old Testament rituals. They're going into something new.
User disconnected
because
from
it's
your
the
channel.
Children of Israel in captivity are described channel. As the blind here, and that's explicit in the subsequent verses.
User,
in other words, I don't see how you could get read this section of Isaiah and not get identity. How could you not get it reading this? This is describing everything we believe. And everything we're sure of from ancient history. And this corroborates it all. And the children of Israel in captivity are pagans. They're not Hebrews. They're not building temples and having menorahs and shit. They're pagans. And this describes them as pagans.
Like in verse 19, where he says, who is blind but my servant, or deaf as my messenger that I sent? Who is blind as he that is perfect? Even in that state, he's calling them perfect, unless I'm understanding that wrong.
No, right. That is right. They're perfect in the eyes of God. They may not be perfect in the eyes of man, but they're perfect in the eyes of God.
And blind as Yahweh's servant.
We're what God wants us to be so that he could perform his will with us in the world.
Yep.
And of course, when we look at one another, we're far from perfect.
Oh.
But if he considers us perfect, that's not because we're ideal. That's because we're fulfilling the role that he wants us to do. And we're going to fulfill it whether he likes us or not.
Yep. It's hard to get through a carnal mind sometimes because that ain't how we weigh it when we look at stuff and see it.
I mean, right, even Judas Iscariot was perfect in the sense that he performed the role that Yahweh wanted him to do by betraying Christ. So he was a perfect devil because he did it all. Did everything he was supposed to. But in the end, he's still a devil. Because it's the will of God that prevails in the world and not the will of man.
Yep.
Seeing many things thou observest not, but you're still perfect. Opening the ears, but you hear not. And there are countless examples of this. I could sit and listen to you and not understand a damn thing you said or care about it, so I ain't gonna hear it. That's been the history of our people, I think. This thing about saying to the graven images, ye are our gods, that's basically what the Israelites said to the golden calf. So in spite of everything they saw, things hadn't changed in 800 years. It's 700 years from, probably about 750 years from the golden calf until Isaiah wrote this. And it'll be 750 more years to the time of Christ. Chapter 43, one of my favorites. God don't care about niggers.
Okay, here we go. Chapter 43. But now thus saith Yahweh that created thee, O Jacob, and he that formed thee, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed thee. I have called thee by thy name, thou art mine. When thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee, and through the rivers, they shall not overflow thee. When thou walkest through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame kindle upon thee. For I am Yahweh thy God, the Holy One of Israel, thy Savior. I gave Egypt for thy ransom, Ethiopia and Sheba for thee. Since thou wast precious in my sight, thou hast been honorable, and I have loved thee. Therefore will I give men for thee and people for thy life. Fear not, for I am with thee. I will bring thy seed from the east and gather thee from the west. I will say to the north, give up, to the south, keep not back. Bring my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth, even every one that is called by my name. For I have created him for my glory. I have formed him. Yeah, I have made him. Bring forth the blind people that have eyes and the deaf that have ears. Let all the nations be gathered together and let the people be assembled who among them can declare this and show us former things. Let them bring forth their witnesses that they may be justified, or let them hear and say, it is truth. Ye are my witnesses, saith Yahweh, and my servants whom I have chosen, that you may know and believe me and understand that I am he. Before me there was no God formed, neither shall there be after me. I, even I, am Yahweh, and besides me there is no Savior. I have declared and have saved, and I have showed when there was no strange God among you. Therefore you are my witnesses, saith Yahweh, that I am God. Yeah, before that day was, I am he, and there is none that can deliver out of my hand. I will work, and who shall let it? Thus saith Yahweh, behold, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, for your sake I have sent to Babylon and have brought down all their nobles and the Chaldeans, whose cry is in the ships. The end of chapter, verse 14.
Well, anyway, for two chapters now, 41 and 42, we've seen that he's addressing the Israelites in captivity, and we've seen that he's basically warning them and begging them at the same time to give up their idols because he is God, and he's proving that he is God to them. So they may as well give up their vain idols and worship him and do what he believes or he tells them that they should be doing. So this whole thing is an appeal to end idolatry and to return to the God of their fathers and to be obedient to him. So here we see, and this is really interesting to me. I've always loved this chapter. Isaiah was writing, as I've explained a bunch of times, probably around 700 to 698 BC, by the popular chronologies. If we want to believe the popular chronologies, which I might try to fix one day, and that's besides the point, even if at the earliest, Sennacherib really invaded Judea a little earlier, and this might be 710 BC, it doesn't really matter. 10 years don't matter. I just put a link in the chat, and here Yahweh said that he gave up. Past tense.
Yep.
Egypt for thy ransom, Ethiopia and Sheba for thee. And I put a link in the chat, and it's from pbs.org, but it's pretty much common knowledge. And this one says 730. I usually round it out in my head to 750. It really don't matter, that 20 years. But this happened before the fall of Samaria and before Sennacherib could have possibly invaded Judea. This page that I just linked is from pbs.org, says around 730 BC, Cush's warrior hordes. Now, they're thinking that the Nubians are Cush. And that's a lie, right? That's not true. But they're explaining that these Nubians, Cush's warrior hordes, turned the tables on a weakened Egypt and conquered it. So what I'm saying is by 730 BC, Cush was already turned into niggers. Ethiopia was overrun by Nubians. Egypt was overrun by Nubians. And probably Seba on that side of the Red Sea in Africa was, or the Persian Gulf, was overrun by Nubians. So here it says Yahweh saying he gave up already, past tense, Egypt for thy ransom, Ethiopia and or Cush, and Seba for thee. And there's some geopolitics to consider here, because let's say that Egypt and Cush and Sheba remain strong and were able to unite with the children of Israel to resist the Assyrians and defeat them. Well, that's not what Yahweh wanted, because then the Israelites would all be turned to niggers along with Egypt, Cush, and Sheba. He wanted to give up or weaken Egypt, Cush, and Sheba so that Israel would go off into captivity. He wanted Israel to go off into captivity. It's already prophesied in the prophet Jonah that Israel is going to go off into captivity in an indirect sort of way. And Jonah was probably 80 to 100 years before Isaiah. Jonah was the earliest of the biblical prophets that we have. He was the earliest of all the books of the prophets. So Yahweh wants Israel to go into captivity in the north and to go to their new homes in the north, like he promised them long before when Samuel spoke to David in 2 Samuel chapter 7, I believe it was. So Egypt and Ethiopia and Sheba, for the sake of the children of Israel, had to be weakened so that they couldn't form an alliance against the Assyrians and prevent the captivity of Israel. That's how I understand this historically, that how this was fulfilled. And they were given up by being overrun by niggers. So would Yahweh give up Egypt, these great white, former white nations? Would he give them up to his friends or to his enemies? So are these Nubians the friends of God or the enemies of God? Because he gave these white nations up to these Nubians.
Microphone activated.
And that's how I see that these niggers are basically the enemies of God. That he gave these white nations up to these niggers and let them be overrun by these niggers for the sake of the children of Israel and preserving the children of Israel, so that the children of Israel would go into captivity. That's how I read this in its historical context.
Can I ask you about verse 7? I've heard you speak on verse 7 before. Could you tell me what you think everyone that is called in my name means?
Well, yeah, I mean, in okay.
Because I have a differing opinion, I think. I don't know.
No, in Isaiah chapter 49, we read, and now saith Yahweh that formed me from the womb to be his servant, to bring Jacob again to him. Right? And O house of Jacob and all the remnant of the house of Israel, which are born by me from the belly, which you carry from the womb. Now, that don't mean that other men aren't formed in the womb by God.
Yeah.
The children of Israel are, and his focus is on the children of Israel, even while they're in captivity. That should answer your question.
43:7?
Yeah.
43:7. Okay.
Yeah, I thought that you once said that it was everyone called in my name would be because we call ourselves Christian.
Well, yes, but this time they didn't call themselves Christian.
Okay, because I thought that maybe because the European languages always use the a variation of Yah, like the Swedes and the Norwegians use Yag and Yag. for when they say I, right? Like I am. We use I in English, and that's pretty much the J. The Slavs use ya. But the French, yeah, it's J E je, but it's really probably a variation of ya. And pretty much every, and I think the Germans say ich or something like that, but I think that's pretty similar too. I was thinking that maybe everybody who referred the word I, the way we describe ourselves, we're really using his name. I don't know.
Okay, I've never thought of it that way. I mean, that's fine. I'm not saying it's wrong. That's kind of interesting, actually. But everyone called by my name. At this time, his name would have been Yahweh. And that the children of Israel were granted an option to be called by the name of Yahweh, to be called one of Yahweh's people or not, to follow him or not, or go off into idolatry and stay in idolatry and probably be destroyed because they're going to be idolaters. That's immaterial. It does have, of course, once he came as Christ and the children of Israel in dispersions had accepted the label of Christians, then yes, they're being called by his name. But not at this time, in the time of what we're talking about, 690 something BC here. They're not being called Christians yet. But they're being challenged to give up their idolatry and turn to him. Now, as far as the pronouns go, that's kind of interesting. I would really want to give that some further study because I never cared to investigate how any other nations had used that first person pronoun or what form of the first person pronoun they had.
I think even even the Spanish say Y-O.
Yo. Or
if that's
yo. Yo means I in Spanish. I know that. In Greek, it's ego. I believe in Latin, it's ego too. So that's kind of totally different.
Yeah. I'm just checking Italian. Yeah, Italian is I-O, so the Y sound again. From Ionian Greek, right? So
user disconnected from your channel.
I don't know if the Italian and the Spanish really have but I think they may have had some Germanic influences in a lot of words from the Goths.
Yeah, apparently I just checked how it's pronounced. They pronounce it Io as well in Italian, even though it's spelled Io. It makes sense. But I mean, I was thinking of how Ionians are actually Yavan, and it's Io. Maybe changed over time. I don't know. I know they're not Ionians, but I'm just making a comparison.
Well, once again, we see references to the blind and the deaf. You are my witnesses and my servant whom I have chosen. So it's only speaking to Yahweh. Yet, you know, they would be his witnesses, but not directly. They would be his witnesses because they would prove that he's God in the fulfillment of his prophecies, even if they didn't understand the prophecies. And someday we're all going to understand that.
Verse 15, I am Yahweh, your Holy One, the Creator of Israel, your King. Thus saith Yahweh, which maketh a way in the sea and a path in the mighty waters, which bringeth forth the chariot and horse, the army and the power. They shall lie down together. They shall not rise. They are extinct. They are quenched as tow. Remember ye not the former things, neither consider the things of old. Behold, I will do a new thing. Now it shall spring forth. Shall ye not know it? I will even make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. The beasts of the field shall honor me, the dragons and the owls, because I give water in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. I give drink to my people, my chosen. This people have I formed for myself. They shall show forth my praise. But thou hast not called upon me, O Jacob, but thou hast been weary of me, O Israel. Thou hast not brought me the small cattle of thy burnt offerings, neither hast thou honored me with thy sacrifices. I have not caused thee to serve with an offering, nor wearied thee with incense. Thou hast brought me no sweet cane with money. Thou hast filled with the fat of thy sacrifices, but thou hast made me to serve with thy sins, that thou hast wearied me with thine iniquities. I am he that blotteth out thy transgressions for my own sake, and will not remember thy sins. Put me in remembrance. Let us plead together. Declare thou that thou mayest be justified. That thy first father hath sinned, and thy teachers have transgressed against me. Therefore I have profaned the princes of the sanctuary, and have given Jacob to the curse, and Israel to reproaches. End of chapter 43.
Well, they're being told that their sins are forgiven if they return to God. Otherwise, they're given over to the curse and to reproaches. That's how I read that. Return to God and your sins are forgiven. Stay with your God and your sins are forgiven. Otherwise, you're just going to be cursed. And you're going to be a worm.
I'll be right back. I got to go to the little boy's room, too.
Y'all got any questions or anything to say? You're more than welcome to interject. There's a lot of people here besides Don and I. Jason, I'm about to set your microphone on.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, okay.
Content just to listen.
I'm sorry, James, you're cutting out a little.
I said I'm content with just listening.
Okay. Can't listen again until Don gets back to the bathroom, though. No. Damn, Don must be pissing a gallon.
pretty close. I had to go a while back, and it just finally couldn't hold, couldn't wait any longer.
I get to feel it all the time. Okay, verse 15, that we've just read these. I am Yahweh, your Holy One, the Creator of Israel, your King. So he's telling us that he's specifically only working with the children of Israel.
Yep.
And then verse 18, remember ye not the former things, neither consider the things of old. Yet, you know, they screwed up everything in the old kingdom. That they could never do the sacrifices right, that they could never do anything right, they could never justify themselves. Why should we remember that shit? We're being told not to remember it. Right there. We're being told to forget it. We should chalk that up to experience and move on. It, these people that try to cling to those Old Testament rituals and practices and traditions, they're just screwing up. It's time to forget that shit. And we're told here explicitly to forget it. And behold, I will do a new thing. And where it says, I will even make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert, he's telling the children of Israel that he's going to bless them wherever they go. And his other statements throughout these 26 chapters of Isaiah later on that also say basically that same thing. And the beasts of the field shall honor me, and the dragons and the owls, because I give waters in the wilderness and rivers in the desert to give drink to my people, my chosen. So you know what? The other races and the beasts and however you want to look at them, they benefit from our yep. blessings all the time. Looking but that at- doesn't mean that Yahweh's doing it for them. He's doing it for us, but they, being there, they can't help to benefit from it. So he's basically saying that they'll praise him. They'll honor him. So why shouldn't the children of Israel even honor him more?
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah, right. But they don't. But no. Yeah, they should.
I mean, look at all our countries. All of them are trying to push into them.
Microphone activated.
Right. All of Europe and here and whatever. I mean.
Yeah, right. And that's covered in other prophecies, but that's a long story.
Yeah, I always cringe when I hear blacks and other races talk about God and how he did this and that for them. And, you know, he loves them so much and they're praising him and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, he doesn't give a shit, but, you know.
Because they got something from Whitey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
right,
a lot of them.
In verse 20, because they got something from Whitey.
Yeah, exactly. Like what you just explained a minute ago, it makes sense because they're getting it from him through us.
Yeah, this reminds me of a person I knew. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. We see the juxtaposition here. The beasts of the field shall honor me, the dragons and the owls, because I give waters in the wilderness, drink through my people. And then it says, but thou hast not called upon me, O Jacob.
Boy, that sure sounds like us here right now.
Yeah, right. The fucking niggers will praise the Lord.
Yeah.
Praise the Lord. And white people don't give a fuck. And the blessings are on account of the white people. They're not for the niggers.
But to them, it seems like that because it's their lifestyle comes up pretty good when they come here.
Yeah, right. They come up, they get free cars and they go to Walmart.
And I mean, I've seen people come here from other countries like Africa and that there at housing. First, they were even content with the house and, you know, that kind of thing. And then they start realizing all the benefits they can get when all their social workers go there. Boy, pretty soon they're living. Right?
Yeah. And also they get to live like past the age of 50 here, right? Because back in the jungle, by the time they hit about 50, the younger niggers will beat their head in and take over.
Right. Cut their dicks off and eat them because they think it's going to give them more fertility and shit. I'm sorry. But they do. So basically, this is saying the beasts and the dragons are going to honor God because of the gifts he gives the children of Israel that they get they're able to rip off a piece of it, but his own children aren't going to honor him. And even though he blots out their sins and he's forgiven them, They won't honor him, so he gives them over to the curse and Israel to reproach us. And people wonder why we got a nigger problem. I'm sorry, Walt, you were going to say? That's the end of my commentary for chapter 43.
No, don't worry. It's that, you know, there was a negress that I knew that she lost a daughter, right? And she kept saying, like, oh, I keep seeing visions of her. It says that she's well, that she's with Jesus, and blah, blah, blah. And I say, oh, you don't even know where your daughter is. Your daughter is gone in every single word available, you know.
Yeah, that's only wishful thinking on her part.
I guess their minds play tricks on them, you know, like, oh, I see X with Jesus or whatever.
Yeah, well, our minds play tricks on us all the time, too.
Well, I'll say, I've worked around some born-again blacks that say stuff like that. And the only thing good I can say about it is that it does change them a lot. They're a lot better, nicer people than they were before. Because some of them weren't very nice people before. I had known them for quite a while. And
yeah, well, that's what Melissa and I call the country nigger. The country nigger is a nigger that thinks that he's getting a share of white society and benefits, and he's in good with the white God and all this. So he's going to be kind to white people because he reaps the rewards of this world when he's kind to white people. He has a job. He nobody bothers him. Everybody's kind to him. People help him in church and shit when he's kind to white people. So he's reaping the rewards of this world. That's the country nigger, as opposed to the thug nigger.
Well, the one guy I'm thinking of, he was both of them, because he was definitely the thug before he changed.
Yeah, I believe he could transform back and forth from a thug nigger or a country nigger and vice versa.
Because he was a nasty SOB before.
You know, another thing, too, though, is about their race is so they mature much quicker than us. And they're basically a man by the time they're 14 or so, right? Even earlier.
Well,
so.
Physically mature, yeah.
Right, that's what I mean. And but then they burn out a lot quicker. They change a lot quicker in middle age than the average white man. They don't have the same endurance or testosterone levels. And they basically burn out and become much more timid at like than us at a much more rapid age. So you can have a guy that's a complete thug when he's like 20. And then by the time he's like 42, he's like, you know, he just lost all his like rage. I mean, it's fairly common that they drop off the map in that regard. That's just something that like race books used to talk about. And the same thing happens to other races too, as opposed to white men who keep it longer or tend to, right? As a group, I'm speaking. So their hormones change at an earlier age than ours.
I don't know, those Chinese, if you eat enough shark fins and tiger penises, you might do all right.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I never knew they turned into a man in the first place.
Yeah, they do sexually mature very fast, faster than, and that's the problem with putting niggers in school with white girls. Because girls typically sexually mature faster than white boys. So niggers sexually mature faster than white boys. And that's why you got 16-year-old niggers fucking 16-year-old white girls, and 16-year-old white boys are still playing video games.
Microphone activated.
Yep. And I've seen that so many times with my own eyes, and it's true. I swear by it.
Yeah, and it's especially noticeable with the immigrant wave that's happened in Europe, where they have all these guys who are basically men with beards that they
put
into 10th grade or 9th grade in Europe, and then they're just wreaking havoc on these.
Martin, is it okay that that's on the recording?